Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, on the internet and around the world. I'm your host, Lauren Cartagena, and thank you again for joining us on another edition of Radio Pangea, the show that brings you the news without any agenda or political bias or spin or anything like that. We just bring the news, and we do what most people don't do anymore in journalism. We bring the truth in news. None of this fake stuff, no fake stories here. Because fake things are not what real people want to hear. No, is that. So, I want to thank everyone again for making 2017 a little bit brighter around here. We're very happy for the listenership, for the responses we've been getting. Thank you for making Radio Pangea your destination for news. Getting to it. The eastern United States began digging out from a massive snowstorm that dumped heavy snow from Georgia to Massachusetts, knocking out power for thousands of people and causing hundreds of car crashes. The snowstorm also caused flight delays and cancellations across the country. The snow began falling heavily in parts of Georgia, North and South Carolina, and Virginia, which lasted until midday. Some of the heaviest snowfall, accumulating about a foot or 30 centimeters, was southeast of Virginia around Williamsburg, and in the northern Carolina coastal areas. Parts of northern Georgia had over 15 centimeters, or just over 6 inches of snow. North Carolina Governor Ray Cooper on social media said the state had more than 700 accidents, but thankfully no fatalities, and about 30,000 power outages. The snowstorm prompted Cooper, a Democrat, to postpone his inaugural ceremony. The storm also interfered with people's travels and with tracking service FlightWare.com, reporting 3,657 flight delays and about 3,400 cancellations for trips around the United States or in or out of the country. The National Weather Service has warned residents of the eastern United States to prepare for more colder temperatures. In particular, the area of northern Carolina and Virginia, already hit with heavy snow, could see temperatures fall into the single digits, or about minus 15 degrees Celsius this evening. Meanwhile, rainfall from the Pacific storm lashing parts of California was expected to intensify on and potentially cause flooding and mudslides, especially near stripped bare or wildfire areas. Also in the news, FCA, the U.S. automaker Fiat Chrysler, announced it would invest a total of $1 billion in plants in Michigan and Ohio, which will add 2,000 new jobs to the United States. The announcement is what the company said was the second phase of a plan it first made public about a year ago, and comes just days after Ford Motor Company decided to scrap a plan to build a facility in Mexico, instead to invest in a plant in Michigan. In a statement, FCA said it would retool and modernize its Warren Truck plant assembly depot to produce a new Jeep and Grand Wagoneers, while a facility in Toledo would build a brand new Jeep pickup truck. SUV trucks and pickup trucks to match the demand of the company by adding what it hopes to solidify the U.S. as a global manufacturing hub for its flagship brands. However, Fiat indicated it would continue to produce at least one line, its Ram heavy-duty truck, in Mexico. Also, SeaWorld in San Diego will host its last killer whale performance, the culmination of its promise to phase out a decade-old show after criticisms of its treatment of captured marine animals. SeaWorld Entertainment President and Chief Executive Officer Joel Manby said in 2015 that the company will replace its signature theatrical killer whale show at the San Diego Park with a new presentation focusing on conservation and orcas' natural behavior, SeaWorld, last year also announced it would stop breeding killer whales in captivity, several months after the California Coastal Commission voted to bar the company from continuing to breed the marine animals in the state. The last so-called One Ocean show, scheduled for this weekend, brings to a close a commercially successful series of performances that have been held at SeaWorld San Diego under different names since the 1960s. Some fans continue to call the show by its previous name, Shamu. However, after January 9, 2017, the lights will go dark, and the last theatrical orca show at SeaWorld San Diego comes after the death on Friday at SeaWorld Orlando of Tillicum, an orca involved in the deaths of three people, which featured in the 2013 documentary film Blackfish. The film made the case against keeping orcas in captivity. SeaWorld said that after its final show, One Ocean show, it will transition to an educational orca program with bleachers set up around the killer whale underwater viewing area for guests to watch the presentation of the animals. The company also plans to debut its larger education programs called Orca Encounters in San Diego this summer. Some activists have called for SeaWorld to release more than 20 orcas it keeps at its three parks into coastal sanctuaries, but the company contends that whales born or raised in captivity would likely die in the wild. British anti-European and political magnate Nigel Farage says he will attend Donald Trump's inauguration as U.S. president invitee. Farage, one of Trump's strongest UK supporters, told Sky News that he had been invited by Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant on behest of Donald Trump. He called the January 20 ceremony in Washington a great historic event and Trump's election a political revolution. Farage led the anti-EU UK Independence Party until last November, and he was a key player in Britain's vote to leave the bloc, otherwise known as the Brexit. He sees Trump as an anti-establishment ally and visited the president-elect soon after the November 8th U.S. vote. In other news, a U.S. jury in Ohio ordered DuPont Chemical Company to pay $10.5 million in punitive damages to a man who said he developed testicular cancer from exposure to a toxic chemical leaked from a DuPont plant. The federal jury had awarded Kenneth Vineran $2 million in compensatory damages in December. His attorney said the jury also awarded attorney's fees to be determined at a later date. This is the third and largest verdict that jurors in the Columbus, Ohio federal court have issued against DuPont for injuries linked to perfluorooctaniic acid, also known as PFOA or C8, which is used to make Teflon. The $12.5 million in damages is more than double the amount awarded in a case decided in July. DuPont faces more than 3,400 lawsuits over the leak of the chemicals from its Parkersburg, West Virginia plant. The leak allegedly contaminated local water supplies and has been linked to six diseases, including testicular and kidney cancer. Vineran claimed he developed testicular cancer from a chemical exposure. DuPont has used C8 in the West Virginia plant since the early 1950s. Vineran alleged the company leaked the chemicals from the facility during the course of its operations. While DuPont is the named defendant in the litigation, it has an agreement that its performance chemical spinoff, Chemours, will cover the cost of the lawsuit. Chemours spokeswoman Cynthia Solitsky said DuPont was directly liable for damages, and Chemours may have defenses to any potential indemnification claim. She also noted the majority of remaining lawsuits claim the chemical caused high cholesterol or thyroid cancer and or thyroid disease. DuPont has lost two other recent trials over C8. The first ended in October 2015 with an award of $1.6 million to a woman who claimed the chemical caused her to develop kidney cancer. Then, in July of 2016, a jury in a case involving a plaintiff with testicular cancer found DuPont acted with actual malice. The jury returned a verdict of $5.1 million, which was later bolstered with $500,000 in punitive damages. Those two trials were test cases or bellwethers meant to determine the major issue and gauge the scale of liability for the remaining litigations. Vineran's case is the first non-bellwether trial in the consolidated litigation, with more than 39 cases slated to go to trial in Columbus over the next year. Getting to our science news. SpaceX postponed the scheduled launch of its Falcon 9 rocket because of high winds and rain at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. The launch would have been the company's first since the launch pad explosion destroyed another rocket last September at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. SpaceX said on its official Twitter account that the next available launch date at the base just north of Lompoc, California, was scheduled for next week. The plan was to carry 10 satellites into space for Iridium Communications Incorporated, which wants to establish a constellation of satellites to deliver mobile communication capabilities on land, on ships, and airplanes. The Hawthorne-based SpaceX and its chief executive, Elon Musk, had originally hoped to return to a flight as soon as last November, but the investigation of its September explosion lasted much longer than anticipated. In a statement, SpaceX said the investigation teams found several credible causes for the vessel's failure, all of which involved the accumulation of oxygen in the rocket's inner liners. The explosion destroyed a satellite that was going to be managed by Israeli satellite operator Spacecom and was also to help Facebook bring high-speed internet data access to remote parts of Africa. In Latin American news, a suspect in the shooting of a U.S. consular official in Mexico City of Guadalajara was arrested. The Jalisco state prosecutor said on Twitter that special agents made the arrest but did not provide further details, including the name of the suspect or any motive. The consular official, later identified by a Mexican security official speaking on the condition of anonymity as Christopher Ashcroft, was shot by a gunman on Friday as he was leaving the parking lot. A video posted online by the consulate in Guadalajara shows the shooter apparently waiting for the official's car to pull up into a parking lot barrier before shooting directly at the driver and then fleeing. Ashcroft was in a stable condition at a local hospital. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry thanked the Mexican government for the swift and decisive arrest of a suspect in the heinous attack against our Foreign Service officer and colleague in Guadalajara, Mexico. The Federal Bureau of Investigation had offered a reward of $20,000 for information that helped identify the shooter. Guadalajara is Mexico's second largest city, and parts of its surrounding Jalisco state have been the scene of violence by drug gang rivals. Getting to our Asian news, officials in Beijing have announced a new environmental police squad to root out illegal burning in the city. The latest government response to the widespread public anger over China's persistent problem with smog, Beijing acting mayor Kai Kui said in a meeting that the force would target open-air barbecues, garbage incinerations, and the burning of wood and other biomass, according to China's official Xinhua news agency. Kai announced several other measures, including the target and cutting of the use of coal by 30% in 2017 and shutting down 500 high-polluting factories and upgrading another 2,500 more. About 300,000 high-pollution vehicles will also be restricted from entering the capital starting next month. Smog is an acutely felt issue in China's cities, where a red alert can lead to the closure of schools and businesses, canceling flights, and shutdown of highways to keep cars off the road. During a red alert in Beijing last month, authorities banned construction crews from spray painting and even seized charcoal grills from the restaurants. China's environmental ministry said during last week's red alert that its inspection teams found companies resuming production despite a full government ban. Many factories under severe pressure to meet production targets, regardless of air pollution, have been the cause. Kai also blamed polluting activities like burning garbage or wood on the result of lax supervision and weak law enforcement. But China's pollution is caused chiefly by its thousands of coal-burning factories and a surplus of older, inefficient vehicles. While it tries to answer the loud public calls to tap down pollution, the communist government is also grappling with an economic slowdown and the challenge of maintaining growth. China is also the world's largest producer and consumer of coal, and measures like capping production days or shutting down older coal mines run the risk of driving up energy prices and further slowing the economy. You're listening to Radio Pangea. When we return, we're going to get to our main story in the Middle East. That is the water treaters that are coming to Damascus in the war-torn Syria to give people there fresh water. We're also going to talk about the different phases of the moon and what to expect this year. There's 10 celestial bodies to see. Will you see all of them? Well, that depends on where you live. That and much more when we return. You're listening to Radio Pangea.
Feel it. to you. Well, if you like what you hear, let us know.
Follow us, would you?
Go to our
Facebook page. It's brand new for this year.
It is facebook.com/
Radio Pangea. Radio Pangea is spelled R-A-D-I-O P-A-N-G-A-E-A. Radio Pangea. Or you can always email us, radiopangea@gmail.com. Follow us on YouTube at
youtube.com/ Pangea Foundation.
Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Well,
I hope you're having a good 2017 so far.
I know it's still young and there's a lot of year left, but we really hope that this year brings prosperity and abundance to you in your life, no matter wherever you may be.
We hope that this year brings a lot of opportunities
and that your talents will lead you to those opportunities so that you can help empower yourself and also bring about the change in life that you would like to see in your community and
make sure that you always give thanks for what you have.
Because it can always be worse.
It can always be worse, right?
Well, anyways, let's get to our main story for the day. And this is going to be something that has been...
something that we've been reporting on for a number of years now, and that is
the situation that is in Syria. It's our main military story, and
it's a different take on the war. As you know, Syria has been involved in a major civil war for the past few years, but we're here to talk about restoring water and how the people that are in Syria, dignity. And one of the things that comes with living in Syria is having fresh, clean water to bathe, to cook with, and to drink. So repair teams are poised to enter the rest of region near Damascus to begin work on restoring the Syrian capital's water supply. Millions of people have been without water for weeks after fighting damaged key infrastructure in the Wadi Barada region that is the main water source for Damascus. Clashes continue overnight and into the morning, killing 7
Syrian government soldiers and 2 civilians.
But the state media said maintenance teams had arrived in the area 50 kilometers or roughly 10 miles northeast of Damascus and were prepared to enter to begin the long repair work. A source close to the regime said a temporary ceasefire had been agreed to allow the repair crews to enter, though it could take days for the main supply to be restored.
Fighting has ravaged Wadi Barada for several weeks, despite the December 30th start of a ceasefire brokered by regime ally Russia and rebel-backed Turkey. The truce has held across much of the country, though it does not apply to the Islamic State group or former al-Qaeda affiliate al-Nusra Front, now known as the Fatah al-Sham Front. The government says Fatah al-Sham is present in Wadi Barada and blames rebels there for cutting water to Damascus since December 22nd. Rebels deny the jihadist group was in the region and says the main supply was severed after government strikes hit pumps facilities in the area.
Roughly 5.5 million people are without water, the UN is reporting.
The fighting has left 5.5 million people in Damascus and its suburbs facing severe water shortages. In a sabotage, water supplies.
It said sabotaging water supplies,
rather, was a war crime and made no direct accusations of blame. Russia and Syria have worked increasingly close on the Syrian conflict that has lasted about a month
of brokered peace negotiations.
They wanted a ceasefire agreement to pave way for new peace talks to be held in the Kazakh capital of Astana later this month. But the fighting in Wadi Barada
has already prompted
rebels to prepare for the Astana meeting and citing regime violations of a ceasefire. Both Moscow and Ankara have launched military interventions in Syria, with Turkey starting its Operation Euphrates Shield in August, targeting both jihadist and Kurdish militants. After seizing several towns from IS, Turkish forces and allied Syrian rebels are now focusing their attention on El Bab, a jihadist bastion in the Aleppo province. A U.S.-backed alliance of Kurdish and Arab fighters has also been advancing into IS-held territory as they press the drive towards the jihadist de facto Syrian capital of Raqqa. Alliance fighters supported by U.S. Special Forces move within striking distance of the Top Dom on the Euphrates River, the country's largest. The dam lies 500 meters from the town of Tabaka, where many senior IS commanders have been based. Russia launched its own military intervention in Syria in late December 2015, aimed at bolstering ally President Bashar al-Assad against the rebels. But it announced in December it would begin withdrawing forces, and the Russian military said its drawdown has begun. President Vladimir Putin has already announced a part withdrawal of Russian forces in March 2016, but Moscow later had to ramp up its presence again as fighting increased. More than 310,000 people have been killed in the Syrian conflict, with anti-government protests in March of 2011. Over half of the country's population has been displaced. So in 6 years, half the population of Syria has been displaced because the United States, with NATO and quote-unquote alliance fighters, have been supported and trained by U.S. Special Forces. Now, exactly who are these alliance fighters? Where do they come from? What are their views? What do they do? The shroud of war, the mystery continues. But just think about that. Think about how 5 years, 6 years' time, half the people of a country can be completely displaced with nowhere to live, to be dumped on the world, to be beggars in countries that may or may not accept them
because of the place they were born.
It'll always be worse.
Wherever you are,
you hear my voice.
You know that not to be true.
So just consider that. Well, getting to our final news story of the day, and this is on a much happier note. The early celestial sightings of 2017 are about to begin. January 12th, we're going to see the evening star at elongation. That's right. Inferior planets such as Mercury and Venus will spend much of its time close to the sun so that it will be directly behind and in front of the Earth. In between these passes by the sun, these inferior planets will swing out from one side of the sun to the other during the greatest elongations. It is during these greatest elongations when the inferior planet is best seen. On Thursday, January 12th, Venus will reach its elongation of 47 degrees in the eastern sun sky and will dominate it for hours before setting. Also, the Moon, Venus, and Mars meet at dusk January 31st. Because of the naked eye, five planets are among the brightest objects in our night sky. Look on the early evening of January 31st to make that number two of the top 10 things to see in the sky this year. That's right. The first two, January 12th and January 31st, look up to the sky. You'll see it there. And with that, thank you for listening to Radio Pangea. It's been great hosting the show. I'm Lauren Cartagena. Until we meet again, please, as always, why don't you think for yourself?